Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, September 23rd. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, authorities investigating fire at homeless encampment in Redway. Permit approved for Humboldt Sun Power Project. And candidates for two Fort Bragg City Council seats present their positions. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Friday evening, the town of Redway was highlighted in an eerie orange glow as a vegetation fire broke out in a known homeless encampment along Redwood Drive, behind Clarkie's Cannabis Dispensary, across from Willow Avenue. The fire caused unrest among local residents, who could see trees sparking from blocks away. Fortunately, the fire was eventually contained, without any reports of damage to structures, injuries, or loss of life. For more information, we spoke with Tron B.A. with the Humboldt Del Norte unit of CAL FIRE.
Hello, my name is Tron B.A., fire captain with CAL FIRE and PIO for the Humboldt Del Norte unit. On Friday evening, around near the hour of 8:45 in the evening, vegetation fire was reported in Redway at the end of Rusk Lane on the what would be on the north end of town. A full wildland dispatch was made by the Emergency Command Center. First in engines reported a quarter acre and requested additional engine. The fire grew uphill and then was reported to be growing. Resources continued suppression activities and eventually later that evening, the fire was contained at just around an acre. The cause of the fire is under investigation, and if anybody has any information, please contact CAL FIRE Prevention Bureau.
The longtime fire captain noted that this area is well known to CAL FIRE and has seen other incidents in the past.
There is some complexities with the homeless population living in the wildland area and the frequency of fires related to cooking and staying warm and burning of debris or trash, I should say, even in people's backyards in an area that's dry and prone to vegetation fires without the added influence of people living in that wildland area.
When asked what solutions could be implemented, he stated,
"It's going to take a larger community response from everybody around, including CAL FIRE, to address that."
For a better understanding of the systemic issues at play, we also spoke with local landowners whose homes were at risk.
Homeowners in this neighborhood don't have fire insurance.
We also heard from those living in encampments.
People are trying to eat and they're trying to stay warm, you know? Those are like the two big ones, the fires out here. I think a lot of the fires are with people trying to eat, you know?
And from community members working to create positive change.
Some of the people are trying, and some of the people probably aren't, and they all need services.
We will bring you that full report later this week. Concluding, the fire captain reminds the public to be vigilant in fire prevention, as the fall is our region's peak fire season.
We are starting to feel some fall temperatures. We've even had some precipitation. But as you're probably feeling today, there's really no change in fire season. Everything is still tinder dry. Fuels, obviously, from the other night, are still apt to burn. And despite cooler temperatures at night and even that precipitation, it doesn't make a difference. And historically, this is really getting into peak season as everything has been exposed to hot, dry weather for the longest duration now. And some of our most devastating fires in the North State have happened in October. So, and the Camp Fire even happened in November. So vigilance and practicing fire safety is going to be important for everyone still.
Anyone with information on Friday evening's vegetation fire should contact the CAL FIRE headquarters in Fortuna at 707-725-4413. Eureka police are investigating a stabbing that took place Saturday morning near the foot of Del Norte Street, where a man was attacked over a bicycle. The suspect fled on the stolen bike, and authorities are seeking information from the public as the investigation continues.
This is Laura Montagna, the public information officer from the Eureka Police Department. On September 21st, 2024, at approximately 10:45 a.m., Eureka police officers were dispatched to the foot of Del Norte Street in Eureka on a report of a stabbing. Officers arrived on scene and located the male victim, who was suffering from multiple stab wounds. The victim was transported to a local hospital for significant injuries that required emergency surgery, but is currently in stable condition. The investigation to this point has revealed that an altercation took place between at least two individuals over a bicycle. During the altercation, the victim was stabbed multiple times with what has been described as a handheld gardening rake. The victim's bicycle was stolen during the altercation, and the suspect was last seen riding the bike south on the Hikshari Trail from West Del Norte. The investigation has been turned over to EPD's Criminal Investigations Unit. So far, details are limited to uninvolved witness statements as the victim has been uncooperative with investigators. However, EPD does believe that the victim knew the suspect. This is an ongoing and active investigation, and EPD is asking anyone that may have information about this assault to contact Detective Donald Bailey at 707-441-4300.
Again, the number to call is 707-441-4300. A Humboldt County permit approval clears the way for new solar power. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County's quest to transition to 100% green energy is getting a 2.8 megawatt boost of new solar power. A permit for construction of a photovoltaic solar power generation facility was approved by the county's Planning Commission at its September 19th meeting. Two limited liability companies, one under an international parent company, EPDR Renewable Energy, are advancing the project on an 11-acre agricultural parcel in the Alton area. A primary concern, potential conversion of agricultural land, is being addressed by requiring continued agricultural operations. Solar power arrays will occupy 7 acres of the 11-acre site, and the space in between the photovoltaic panels will be used for grazing and beekeeping. The power generation will be used locally under an agreement with the Redwood Coast Energy Authority, or RCEA. The energy will be fed directly into the power grid without battery storage, which streamlines the project's footprint. But that won't be the way it goes with future projects. Richard Engel, RCEA's Power Resources Director, explained.
Just with changes that have been happening on the grid and power markets and grid reliability concerns in California, it's become increasingly important to include energy storage as part of new solar development. And recognizing that, we just last month went to our own board of directors with a proposal to change our feed-in tariff program so that future contracts will require that projects of more than 1 megawatt in size, and they can be up to 5 megawatts per the program, would require battery energy storage to be included in the project. So you might see future projects coming to you that are contracted under our feed-in tariff that will include energy storage, but we don't have provision for that in this project, which originally came under contract with us a few years ago.
There was no public comment, and commissioners supported permit approval. Commissioner Ivor Skavdal believes the project could aid the site's agricultural use.
This is not preventing the continuous agricultural use of this property. In fact, it's been demonstrated that those uses are going to continue. I actually think that diversity of income could be beneficial and help preserve ag lands. So I think these types of projects add value in that sense. And then also, I think we're going to see our own climate action plan coming here soon. And again, these types of projects could help mitigate some of the impacts that agriculture has on the climate here in Humboldt County. So I'm supportive of the project.
Commissioner Jerome Curiazzi described the project as innovative.
Overall, I'm very excited about this project and to see the hard work that Redwood Coast Energy Authority has been putting in to try to encourage these types of projects. So I really appreciate the applicant pursuing this. And I was particularly excited to see the mitigation measure proposal to do what is being termed as agrivoltaic. So basically looking at ways to combine both agricultural uses with renewable energy power. So this is particularly exciting. It's actually relatively new. So it's very cool that that's happening here in the county. And in fact, the State Energy Commission currently has funding out to research this exact type of project. So I really applaud staff and the applicant for pursuing this.
The project's conditional use permit was unanimously approved. Also at the meeting, commissioners approved a conditional use permit to add a cannabis micro-business to an existing 10,000-square-foot farm in the Fortuna area. The permit allows a variety of uses, including non-volatile manufacturing and farm-based retail at off-site special events. The commission also approved permits for existing cannabis farms in the New Harris and Bridgeville areas. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In another edition of County Conversations, our monthly check-in with Humboldt County Supervisors, we speak with Natalie Arroyo, representing Humboldt's 4th District, which includes the unincorporated areas of Eureka, Fairhaven, and Samoa. In tonight's interview, we discussed a range of topics, including RCEA considering the use of nuclear energy, Humboldt County's climate goals, and the California Main Street Conference. Good afternoon, Supervisor Arroyo, and thank you so much for joining us here at KMUD. I'm hoping we can jump right in. With your background with RCEA, can you share a quick overview and your thoughts on the nuclear power option currently being considered for a Humboldt energy source?
Absolutely. So I'm a board member with the Redwood Coast Energy Authority. We're a community choice aggregator, so we provide an alternative for our customers to procuring power, buying power directly from PG&E. And so we're able to offer some additional energy programs and services, and we really strive to keep our rates a little below what PG&E rates are. So that's who we are as an organization. I'm the county's appointee to that board. So I've been on the board a little over a year and a half. I got right onto it and kind of jumped right into learning about energy and the world of energy policy when I got on that board. So definitely a lot to learn still. And so one of the things that we have in place is a policy, a no nuclear policy. And that has been in place with the organization for a while. But recently our team of staff learned that, right now basically everyone in California is paying for the ongoing operation of Diablo Canyon Nuclear Plant, which is on the Central Coast. And it needs to continue to be operated until it can be safely decommissioned. And so we're already paying for ongoing production of power there. And it will be decommissioned. There's no question about that. So now the question is whether we should accept what is essentially not a free allocation of power, but something that we are already paying for, like accept that allocation of essentially that power resource, those electrons to power, our community. So that's the question that the RCEA board will make a decision on at this next meeting. And, it's not an easy question. Of course, I definitely support the anti-nuclear policy that we have in place. And I don't want to see more proliferation of nuclear energy because of the inherent risks involved. I just don't think it's a safe enough industry for there to be more nuclear power plants. But that said, the big question is, should we accept the power from the plant that already exists that we're paying for? So that's the crux of the matter. And, you know, I think I'm definitely interested in what the community has to say. I've heard from quite a few people who, you know, oppose it no matter what. And then others who say under these particular circumstances, I think it would be okay to accept it. So we'll see kind of what decision we ultimately come to.
State Bill 32 mandates emission reductions of 40% below 1990 levels by 2030, which is around the corner. And the county is creating the Regional Climate Action Plan. How will nuclear power align with those goals? And what other options is the county, local agencies, and nonprofits considering to meet those targets?
Yes. So in the short term, if we were to accept the power, it would be, you know, essentially holding our nose and kind of accepting it for a short period of time because we're already paying for it, like I said. And it is a low or low carbon or carbon free energy option. And, you know, I think there are advocates. There's a small but vocal group of advocates out there in the world who think, you know, more nuclear is good because it is clean in some ways, and it can just obviously have disastrous consequences if there's an issue. Very disastrous. So, you know, that nuclear power for a short period of time could play into, you know, lower carbon footprint mix of power sources, but that's not ultimately going to be the solution for Humboldt County in any way, shape, or form. That's just kind of the short-term option. So as far as our climate action plan, you know, many of the other areas of focus, more than almost 75% of our emissions in the county are from transportation. That's common throughout the United States, but ours are a little higher. Usually it's over 50%, but ours are, I think, 73% of our calculated, you know, emissions are due to transportation. So, you know, there's a lot of areas of focus around that, around regional collaboration with our transportation planning agency and meeting the goals of, you know, thankfully we already have a lot of plans outlining what we need to do to reduce emissions goals. But I think the challenging part is it involves behavior change for people, and that's really hard. There's also, you know, expanding our electrical infrastructure, investing in a wider range of renewable energy sources, and really thinking about how the rural parts of our community need to be served in a different way than the more densely populated areas, you know, kind of on the coast and around Humboldt Bay. So those are all reflected in our plan. I think it's, you know, honestly, I'm really proud of what our team has put together. And during our meeting, when we talked about it, I had some additional ideas and input. But by and large, I, you know, really support what they have done so far and just had a few additional nuances to add.
I want to switch topics and go to the CPUC, who on the 26th, I believe, is considering funding for asymmetric broadband, another important issue here locally. And it's my understanding you'll be a local representative kind of spearheading this. If you could talk about how you plan to pursue this matter with the state agency and share your voice representing the county.
Yeah, so the CPUC and other, you know, funding streams have helped Humboldt County get millions in funding for broadband. The county, I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding thinking that the county was the administrator of that funding. We are not. It's going to, a lot of these projects are going to be led by a company called Vero Wireless that has put together these applications in conjunction with, you know, the county has been in providing input. But the California Center for Rural Policy has been helping. Connie Stewart has really led the way in this. It's been a passion project of hers. And so we're going to see a lot of not only middle mile, what they call middle mile, which is like the connection from the kind of main source of broadband internet to, you know, out branching out into communities. And then that last mile, which is connecting to people's homes and making sure that people actually have that access directly to their homes and neighborhoods. So both of those middle mile and kind of last mile factors are considered in this. So there's going to be a wide array of projects happening, and we're certainly excited to see it. I've been keeping track of it, but it's not being organized or led specifically by the county, but we're huge partners in it.
And with just a few minutes left on the clock, I want to open it up to you to see if there's other things you would like to update on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm at the California Main Street Conference today, which is taking place in Eureka. So that's bringing together business leaders from all over the state to talk about, you know, how we really revitalize and keep strong our small Main Street communities and our small businesses that make, you know, Humboldt and other, you know, small towns throughout California just such great places to live. It's been a, you know, I think a tough time for small businesses. We've certainly seen the impacts of that, but it's cool to be here and to be learning from other people who are experts in this. So really excited to be here. I got the chance to deliver the opening address today and the last day of the conference and talk a little bit about some of Humboldt's economic development strategies. So definitely I'm feeling invigorated and inspired today.
Anything else the public should know?
You know, I have a pretty robust Instagram and Facebook feed of daily activities. It certainly doesn't capture everything I'm doing. But if people do want to follow me on Instagram, it's Arroyo Supervisor is my handle. And I do have a dedicated Natalie Arroyo 4th District Supervisor Facebook page that's, you know, separate from a personal account. It's really updating folks about what I'm up to. And I encourage people to follow those if they just want, you know, a little snippet into more of what I'm up to.
Again, that was Supervisor Natalie Arroyo, representing Humboldt's 4th District. You can catch Supervisor Arroyo on our county conversations on the 4th Monday of each month. Turning to Mendocino, candidates for two Fort Bragg City Council seats present their position. KZYX's Elise Cox reports.
The five candidates vying for two seats on the Fort Bragg City Council gathered together in one place for the first time last week and made their case to voters. Bethany Brewer, Ryan Bushnell, Scott Hockett, Lindy Peters, and Mel Salazar offered their positions on issues including the Skunk Train litigation, Airbnbs, and annexation of the harbor. The forum was organized by the League of Women Voters and held at the Fort Bragg City Hall on September 19th. On some issues, there was broad agreement, and on others, the candidates said they needed to be in office in order to take a stand. Though none of the issues were new and all had previously been discussed publicly, as is required by law. KZYX will present highlights of the forum in this newscast. We'll be airing an edited 60-minute version of the forum at 9 a.m., and you'll find a recording of the entire forum on the City of Fort Bragg's webpage.
Thank you. This next question is also for every candidate. Have you accepted campaign contributions from the Skunk Train or Mendocino Railway? And where do you stand on the city's current litigation with Mendocino Railway? I'll start with Bethany.
Hi, thank you. No, I have not accepted anything from Skunk Train. And I really have a hope that I'd be happy when court is done. When litigations are over, I would love to see everybody in the room together having open conversations. It feels very separate right now.
No?
No, I have not received any contribution as well. But I feel we don't have all the facts, us here as candidates, you know, except Lindy. We don't have the facts, and I believe it is a little bit unreasonable for the community to expect that of any of us, that we will have clear answers before being elected.
Thank you. Lindy?
No, I haven't received any contributions, nor have I even spoken to anyone from the Skunk Train. The city is right now in mediation. We're trying to avoid litigation, which right now is going to be in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and we're in discovery right now. We have prevailed in every court, in front of every judge. The reason this is ongoing is because the adversary, the Skunk Train, has appealed everything. But we're standing firm. That is our future. I was on the city council in 2002 when the mill closed down. I was here when all those jobs were lost. And people said, last one across an oil bridge, turn out the lights. Fort Bragg's done. Well, guess what? We're still here. And that mill site is our future. We're having an LCP amendment to the Coastal Commission, as I mentioned. We're rezoning it. And I think we should try and sustain Fort Bragg as best we can. Wouldn't it be nice to have a dairy out there like they have in Lolita, or a small mill to produce lumber and building materials? to have a desalinization plant, to have aquaculture, to be able to sustain the people that live here now by using the property that's there. If we zone it properly, it'll happen.
Would you support a tax on Airbnb and other transient housing to encourage rental inventory that is currently withheld from the market? So let's begin with Ryan.
I absolutely would support that. I do know that Airbnbs are currently only allowed in the Central Business District, but let's be honest, they're everywhere.
Thank you. Thank you, Lindy.
That's because, as I said, TOT tax, tourist occupancy tax, is something the general fund uses for discretionary funding. Now, if you stay in a hotel, you're going to have to pay the TOT tax. But if you stay in Airbnb right now, you don't. And it is correct. There are a lot of them out there that we don't even know about.
Another question for all candidates. What is your position on potential annexation of the harbor from the county? Thank you. Scott.
Okay, this city annexation plan, I've looked at it, and it's for both sides of the harbor. I have some issues with it. I think that it could be a good thing at some point, but I feel like we need to focus on this property behind us first and get this settled and hopefully developed housing, and then work on that. I mean, we're going to get so spread out that I feel like that's not a good thing.
Thank you. Lindy.
Well, I understand that an annexation process is very complicated. First of all, you have to design an area. Then you've got to have the people that live or work in that area vote that they want to come into the city. It has to go through LAFCO, the Local Agency Formation Commission, and then there has to be a tax sharing agreement. It's very, very complicated. Should we do it? I think we should. Right now, the harbor should be thankful that the city's providing water to the harbor. Right now, the harbor should be thankful that when there's a police action or there's a fire, our first responders are there first, the city police officers. Oftentimes, there's not a deputy sheriff within 2 or 3 hours of the harbor in the middle of the night. So we're already providing service, police service and water service to the harbor. If you look at the road going down to the harbor, you'll see 2 yellow lines going down to about where the county takes over. The city's done a good job, I think, of providing service. And the next thing and most important thing we need to do is to provide an egress out the harbor. And if we annex it, that's what we're going to do. You'll go into the harbor the way you go in now, and you'll come out around the Cliff House and back out on Highway 1.
For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz and Elise Cox. KMA News is online. You can find us on KMA.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Twitter. That's where you can see stories, related documents, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@KMA.org. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.